Senator Dick Durbin's joining us this morning. Senator, as always, privilege. How are you?
I'm okay. We talked a little bit before we came on the show about what's going on with this COVID-19. It is really worrying me a lot. With the infection rate in our state is spiking. It's three times what it was October 1st. And unfortunately, it takes its toll, not just on the lives of people we love, but also on these healthcare workers. My goodness, they've been fighting this thing for 9 months or 10 months already and going to work every day and risking their lives to do it. I don't know how much longer they can put up with this. We need a break.
You know, it's interesting because people who don't watch you as closely as I do may not be aware of how long you've been banging the drum on the need for more nurses and educational programs. If I remember, one of the last times you were at John A. Logan College, it was, I believe, one of the subjects you had brought up. So we need more nursing programs. We need more nurses. Long before COVID, you were banging that drum.
Well, because bottom line is this, and as a politician, not in the most trusted profession in America, I will tell you, when it comes to medical care and health care, we love our doctors. We need them. We desperately do. But when you ask people, who do you respect the most, it's the nurse. And you say, well, I wonder why. Well, because after the doctor's made his rounds for the next 22, 23 hours of the day, it's the nurse with your loved one. It's the nurse with your child. And you develop this strong, trusting relationship. And we need more. We need more professionals across the board. It isn't just doctors, nurses, dentists, mental health counselors. I mean, let's get serious about this. If we want America to be healthy and continue and come through this in the right way, we've got to invest. And that means not burdening with a new doctor with $300,000 in debt, where they can't go to downstate or Southern Illinois because it's too, you know, they've got debts to pay. We've got to find a way. I've got a bill with Marco Rubio that moves in that direction.
So the announcement this week that you were will be serving as a Senate Democratic Caucus as whip again as you enter your fifth term.
Yes, I'm looking forward to this because I think we've got a lot of challenges, starting with COVID-19, starting with health care. Good news, in a way, if we can look through the tea leaves, it looks like the Supreme Court is not going to eliminate the Affordable Care Act. For 600,000 people in our state, it means they won't lose their health insurance. For the rest of us, it means our health insurance policies will have some provisions in it, which all of us value. For example, you can't discriminate because somebody in the family has had COVID-19. You can't discriminate because someone's a diabetic or survived cancer. So it looks, just, you know, listening to the arguments before the court, that they're going to toss this challenge to the Affordable Care Act. We got a starting point to improve it. How do we improve it? Cost of prescription drugs. Let me tell you, when you talk to insurance companies, they say, you want to know why your premium's going up? Because the cost of prescription drugs is going through the roof. We've got to find a way to deal with that.
And, you know, it's interesting because the pivot point or the fulcrum point for this argument was the mandate itself. But I couldn't help when I was watching the coverage of that, Senator, saying, look, even if the Supreme Court does rule against this in favor of these states who are filing these lawsuits, the decision from the Supreme Court, I think, wasn't due until June of next year. Wouldn't the legislature have an opportunity to fix these perceived or real problems as they are?
Yes, but for 10 years we've said that and done nothing. It really has just been kind of a political standoff. And if the Senate is in Republican hands and the House in Democratic hands, it would take a breakthrough for that to change. But there are a lot of things we ought to do in terms of the Affordable Care Act to make it better, make it more affordable. I believe in a public option. If you don't want to have a public option health insurance plan, that's your business. Government's not going to require you to. But if that's your choice, you want a Medicare-type plan, you ought to be able to make that choice. That's where I stand.
$1.4 trillion spending package introduced yesterday. When I was looking at some of the figures, now this is not a stimulus package. I think we need to be clear about this. This is addressing some budgetary issues. And when I looked at these figures, $69.8 billion Homeland Security, $696 billion Defense, $96.3 billion Department of Health, $23 billion Agriculture. Does this have a chance getting through the Senate?
Well, we're going to come back, and December 11th is the magic day. That's when the temporary spending bill is going to expire. And the question is whether or not we're going to go through this so-called continuing resolution, which, for those listening, it's like saying, well, take whatever your family budget was in November of 2019, and that's exactly what it'll be in 2020. You know better. You know, things are a lot different each year. So that's what a continuing resolution does. It just keeps appropriating the same amount of money from last year. But if we can, and I think we can, work on a bipartisan solution, we'll have a spending bill to take us through the rest of the fiscal year.
You know, with the makeup, we're starting to learn more. The thinnest margin of one party in some 20 years, I believe, when you start looking at the House and the split up right now, the House looks to be, well, it was 232 for Democrats. Now it'll be 218. This election did take a toll on people. And the recent comments that you made in Chicago tonight on a television program, you know, with the fair tax failure and the perceived makeup right now in the Senate and the House, should Illinois look for a bailout? Could it look for a bailout? Is it Michael Madigan's fault that the fair tax didn't pass? I know that's a bundle of stuff, but...
That's a bundle of questions. Let me sort them out. First things first. Yes, I called for Michael Madigan to step down as the state party chair. I just watched too many of our candidates running, not against their Republican opponents, but running against Michael Madigan. All the ads were lined up and stacked up. Millions, literally millions of dollars being spent saying so-and-so is a pawn, so-and-so is a tool of Michael Madigan of Chicago and his bosses and so forth and so on. And I know these people who were the objects of these ads, and it's not true. It isn't even close to being true. And, you know, at that point you say, as state party chair, you're not doing us any favors, Mr. Madigan. You're hurting your own Democratic candidates. We recruit them, and they get eaten up and spit out at the end of the day because you happen to have a name that is in the headlines. So I called on him to step down. And, you know, it's just basically my feeling on the subject. Well, the next day, the governor called and said, I'm going to join you. Tammy Duckworth said, I'm joining you, too. Now others have. I'm not out on a crusader campaign. I believe what I said is true. I stand by it. He is not a benefit to our party at this point. He's a distraction, and he costs us dearly.
So will that have an impact on, well, let's turn that page on Madigan and look just to the legislative makeup in D.C. and Illinois' debt. Has the governor ever said, Senator, we need help, we need to bail out? Has he ever had that conversation with you? Because we know we've asked, we've seen the Republican letter sent back to the legislators saying it's not going to happen. What's your thoughts on Illinois seeing some type of relief from D.C.?
I think it's possible. And the governor had a briefing with both parties, Democrats, Republicans, congressmen, months ago. First question I asked, okay, Governor, how much of this money are you going to spend on fixing our pension mess? And the answer was none. What we're trying to do is to make up the difference between the revenues that came to the state before COVID-19 and after. And the same thing with local units of government. You know these mayors, you know these heads of county boards. They're telling you, we just aren't selling as much as we used to. We don't have the revenue coming in. We've got to trim our sales. So that's the difference we're trying to make up at these different levels. I think it's possible, not the original dollar amounts requested, but I think it's possible to have some relief.
I was just looking, $7,991,909,374.53 this morning when it comes to general fund's backlog. So, you know, behind the eight ball, and that doesn't even count the pension. So before we go, we've only got about a minute and a half left, and I know I've got to let the senator go because he has a meeting coming up. But I want to talk to you quickly about the transition, the arguments, the recount in Georgia. Kind of want to make this a free-for-all from your point of view, Senator Dick Durbin, and what are we going to see in the coming days? Georgia has to have this certified by the 20th, and there are other lawsuits, including, I believe, Michigan and Pennsylvania.
So far, the Trump campaign has filed almost a dozen lawsuits, and they've all been dismissed. They have no evidence of any widespread fraud or wrongdoing. Do they have a right in some places to protest? Georgia's a good example. But the Georgia numbers are not in the Biden column at this point. They're still up in the air. Joe Biden, according to the press and major networks, has a solid majority that he needs to be the next president, and he will be. He called me yesterday on the phone, and we talked about this. He said, Trump won't sign off on the transition. But we're going forward. We're going to do everything we're supposed to do. We're in the midst of a pandemic. We can't afford not to. And I said, you're just right. Keep your nose pointed in the right direction in terms of this country. And let me just say another thing. As a parent, do you remember when you had to sit down with your son or daughter and say, you've got to go over after you lose and shake their hands? That's what we do. That's good sportsmanship. It's painful. You don't think you should have lost. You're still mad at that call the referee made. But you're going to do it because that's what class is all about. The president never learned that lesson. And what he's teaching us now is when you lose, you just put your head down and say they're wrong. I never lost. That's just not reality. That's not life as we know it.
But that precedent was set by Hillary Clinton and Al Gore. I think Al Gore didn't concede until December.
Oh, he certainly did.
December 13th.
So did Hillary. And listen, Al Gore's case was a question of one state, Florida, a difference of 537 votes. And yes, there was a recount, and it went to the courts. There isn't another state in the union that is even close to that number today. We know what this is going to, the outcome is going to be on January 20th. It's going to be President Joe Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris. We ought to put our heads down and say, all right, how are we going to make this a better country under this new leadership?
Did Hillary concede, Senator?
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. I watched the tape last night. She conceded. Everyone has conceded. This is the only president who has not conceded. Gore conceded. After the Supreme Court decision, he stepped up and he said, that's the end of it. For the good of the nation, we're going to stand behind President Bush.
Senator Dick Durbin. Senator, I kept you a little minute longer than I should have. So sorry, but thank you for your time, every minute of it.
I feel the same way. Thanks for letting me be on your show.